Hi, everyone. This is Marion from the Talking Information Center, and this is the Patriot Ledger for Tuesday, February 17th. First, an update on the Quincy mayor's petition. Parties of the lawsuit pitting Quincy residents who signed a petition to claw back a portion of the mayor's $126,000 raise and the city clerk who rejected their signatures made closing arguments before a Norfolk Superior Court judge. Judge Rosemary Connolly listened to the arguments, asking questions of the attorneys for about an hour and a half on Friday, February 13th. Connolly will issue a ruling at a later date. Attorneys representing City Clerk Nicole Crispo made two arguments, that petitions cannot lawfully set the salaries of mayors and city councilors, and that Crispo rightfully disregarded hand-printed names in a column titled Name, which appeared a couple of inches to the left of the column titled Signature. Defense attorney Greg Horbo cited the Chapter 39, Section 6A of Massachusetts law, which authorizes city councils to set salaries for mayors and councilors. Under the law, citizens can challenge salaries through referendum, a different process than a petition with a higher bar. Referendums require more signatures to be collected in a shorter period of time than petitions. Opponents of the mayor's and city council's raises attempted to repeal them through referendum in the summer of 2024, but fell short of the required signatures. It's a purely hypothetical exercise, Corbo said of the petition. This cannot go onto the ballot because it's not authorized under Section 6A. Arguing for the plaintiffs, attorney Jerry McDonough said, the state law establishes the referendum as a way to repeal salary ordinances, whereas the plaintiff's position aims to set a new, smaller raise, which he said the law does not prohibit. If the petition is certified, the city council would have the option to adopt it unaltered as an ordinance, which would not contradict the language of Chapter 39, Section 68, McDonough added. Separate from the petition and the lawsuit, at the February 2nd City Council meeting, Ward 5 Councilor Maggie McGee introduced ordinances that would repeal measures passed in 2024, giving the mayor a $126,000 raise and the councilors $15,000 raises. The proposed ordinances were sent to committee. Defense attorney Lauren Goldberg said that Crispo was bound by law to review the petitions based solely on signatures and addresses. She categorized the printed names as extraneous information. If the court adopts the plaintiff's position, Goldberg argued, clerks would have to consider any manner of things, such as social security numbers, exemplars of handwriting, and driver's licenses. It opens a Pandora's box, she said, but it does if state regulation doesn't say you have to do those other things, Judge Connolly questioned. It just says printed name. Connolly referred to regulations promulgated by the Massachusetts Secretary of State, which say registrars, quote, shall certify names in which the name is printed. Goldberg replied that the regulations exist in a context where petition forms only have two columns, address and signature. Unlike statewide petitions and nomination papers, there's no common template for municipal petitions. There is nothing prohibiting them from printing legibly, Goldberg said. They could have done that, and they didn't. Lawyers for the defendants argue that Crispo's disregard of the printed names disenfranchised almost 1,400 citizens, causing the petition to fail when it should have succeeded. Quincy voters should not lose their voice because the defendant refused to look at information on the signature line that allows the common sense requires, McDonough said. Harvard Law student Lois Goldsmith contested Goldberg's description of the printed names as extraneous. Names are very purpose for this enterprise, he said. Crispo's decision to ignore the names because they were printed just inches to the left of the column violated the constitutional rights on a base technicality, said Goldsmith. Their voices were not heard. They were shut out of democratic process because of penmanship and pedantry. So far, the city has spent $32,135.36 on the law firm to defend Crispo in this case, the mayor's chief of staff said on Thursday. The debated petition, organized by Quincy Citizens for Fair Raises, aims to give the mayor a much smaller pay increase than the $126,000 one Mayor Tom Koch ordered and the previous city council unanimously approved in 2024. The petition calls for paying the mayor $183,000 a year year instead of the approved $285,000. Coe currently receives $159,000 annually, including a $9,000 travel stipend. The raise was originally to take effect in January 2025, but State Ethics Commission intervened over conflict of interest concerns, and Coe deferred the raise until 2028 after the next mayoral election. The two-day evidentiary hearing took place on January 8th and 9th, during which CRISPO, petition organizers Joe Murphy and Stephen Perdios, and signatory Ali Ticino testified. In September, Quincy Citizens for Fair Raises submitted 7,163 signatures. 3 days later, the city election divisions told the organizers that only 4,445 were certified, meaning the petition fell short of the 500,575 needed to place the question on the November ballot by 828 signatures. The petitions included columns titled Name, Address, and Signature. In most cases, signatories printed their names and addresses and signed their names in cursive. On learning that CRISPO's office did not review the printed names, organizers raised money to hire legal representation and sued the city in October. The judge ruled that there wasn't enough time to decide the matter before the November 4th election, but she agreed to examine evidence regarding the rejection of illegible signatures where printed names were also available in the same line of the petition. The court ordered the city to review the petitions again and determine how many rejected signatures would have been accepted had the clerk considered the printed names. The answer was 1,397, enough to advance the ballot question about the mayor's raise. A Quincy chef will be competing in the Top Chef show. North Quincy chef Lawrence Louis will appear as one of 15 contestants on Top Chef, the Emmy Award-winning show, which premieres its 23rd season on March 9th. Louis opened Rubato, a small Hong Kong-style cafe, on Hancock Street in 2022, shot over 8 weeks in the Carolinas with most of the filming done in Charlotte and Greenville. The season will showcase Southern cuisine, featuring guest appearances, creative challenges, eliminations, and big cash prizes. The chefs will be competing for the show's $250,000 grand prize, along with some other major perks, including a feature in Food & Wine magazine, an appearance at the annual Food & Wine Classic in Aspen, Colorado, a chance to headline their own exclusive dinner at the historic James Beard House in New York, and the opportunity to present at the James Beard Restaurant and Chef Awards in Chicago. Louis is no stranger to the limelight. Since opening Rubato, he has received major awards and nominations. In 2024, he emerged victorious on the Food Network's popular cooking show called Chopped, winning $10,000. With Top Chef, the stage has only gotten bigger and brighter. It's the show, said Louis. When he learned of his selection for the show, Louis said he began watching previous seasons, preparing himself as best he could for challenges meant to be unpredictable. At that point, he didn't know the location yet. I was thinking, we haven't been there. I'd crush it in Hong Kong. When the location was announced, Louis went hard on research of Southern cuisine while also brushing up on recipes from his time in Oleana in Cambridge under James Beard Award winner Anna Sorton as head chef at London's Okalava and now closed Turkish restaurant of acclaimed chef Selin Kazam. Louis joked that he didn't know how acquainted Carolinians are with Chinese food. Is it going to be Hoisin sauce, he said? Soy sauce? I had to be prepared as much as possible to work with as little as possible. His wife, Rari Rastafa, helped him train for that. The couple met in Guangzhou in South China, where she was studying business and he was studying Mandarin, and informally apprenticing at a hand-pulled noodle shop on the side. We practiced challenges, Louis said. She'd say, you have 30 minutes to make an entree with these ingredients. It gets the muscles going again, Louis and Rafisa said, welcomed the first son into the world in 2024, which Louis said made the 8-week commitment to the show harder. But they ultimately decided the opportunity was too great to pass up. It's an opportunity for you to showcase your talents, his wife said. You're really good on TV and in your kitchen. I think it was the right opportunity. Because the season hasn't aired yet, Louis couldn't comment on the specifics about his experiences. He did say his time bonding with other talented chefs, sometime in intense situation, was the most memorable part of the show. No matter what the results are, it's the people who you are with, he said. You build these relationships through being in that space together, pushing yourself as a chef to do your best. It's been a remarkable run for the 38-year-old Louis and Roboto since 2022, and despite the accolades and television appearances, he's still ambitious. We want to grow, he said, grow within certain parameters based on our values. What kind of food do we want to put out in the world? What kind of spaces do we want to be opening? What does that look like for our family? Louis said that whatever comes next, his goal remains the same, to expand how people understand Chinese food and Chinese American food. We want to open more restaurants, and we think a lot about that. Viewers can watch by turning into Bravo TV when the show premieres on Monday, March 9th at 9 p.m. Subsequent episodes will air on Mondays at 9:30 p.m. each week. All episodes of season 23 will be supersized to 75 minutes. Episodes are available for streaming by the following day on Peacock. In Easton, students are writing positive messages seen on signs around different yards. Hundreds of bright orange yard signs with positive messages are popping up around Easton, though some may be hidden until the snow melts. The mastermind is Devin Beck, health teacher at Richardson Olmsted Elementary School. He said, my idea was to have my fifth grade class all come up with a slogan, a class-wide slogan for yard signs to have a kind of mass effect on positivity. He got a grant for $1,000 from the nonprofit Sarah's Village, which was matched with another $1,000 from the Richardson Olmsted Parent Teacher Association. That was enough for 300 signs, which students brought home with them. They struck a chord in town, Beck said, and people have been asking him for their own. Sarah's Village is printing 300 more, he said on Wednesday, January 28th. People can get one for free. We're asking that they make a small donation to Sarah's Village directly to help cover the cost. To get a sign, you can email Beck at dbeck@easton.k12.ma.us. Beck said he aimed to flood the town with positivity. There's a lot of negativity right now, he said, townwide, worldwide, just everywhere you look. The news is generally not the greatest. Like communities across Massachusetts, Easton has faced budget constraints after a vote to significantly raise property taxes, called Proposition 2.5 override, failed. If the override failed, according to the town, officials would have to make the following cuts by July 1st, 2025. Easton schools have faced steep cuts since the Proposition 2.5 override to fund the schools and other town services failed last June. On top of the loss of teaching positions, Olmsted Elementary Principal Chris Gretchel noted the rates of depression and anxiety among teenagers across the United States is at its highest in years. Gretchel said that Beck is the school's first full-time health teacher. The position was created as part of the school's push to prioritize physical and mental health, he said. He wrote the health curriculum, basically, that we use. He's a pioneer, I think, in terms of health education in elementary school, and based on statistics we read, it's doing really good work. Social-emotional well-being, Beck said, is the most important topic in his class for fifth graders. I do a lot of groundwork and group work, a lot of respecting each other's opinions, values, beliefs, working together to come up with a solution, coming up with strategies if they're struggling, or they see somebody struggling. How can they help them? How can you help yourself? When Breck brought the yard sign project to his students, he said they took to it right away. Students in each of his ten fifth grade classes brainstormed ideas and then voted on which one they thought was best. Here are the slogans on the signs across Easton. You are not alone. Be you. Being different is a superpower. Don't let others tear you down. Don't stop believing. Every mile, the bigger the smile. Kindness matters just like you. Life is short, spend it smiling. People care, even if you don't see it. And you are loved no matter what. Natalie Dutsonian, 11, said, we would think about what people would like to see when they're the most upset, explaining how she and her classmates decided which message to vote for. Amazon Pharmacy will expand same-day prescription delivery to Massachusetts this year. Amazon Pharmacy will soon offer same-day prescription delivery in Massachusetts as part of a nationwide expansion that will add nearly 2,000 cities and towns to its network by the end of 2026. The online retailer's pharmacy service, which launched in 2020, delivers prescribed medication directly to customers' homes, Amazon said. With same-day delivery, customers who order medications by 4 p.m. can typically receive it at home by 10 p.m. The expansion of Amazon's same-day prescription delivery service comes as other national pharmacy chains, such as Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid, have shuttered numerous locations. Pharmacy closures, staffing shortages, and transportation barriers are leaving millions of customers with fewer ways to get their medications they rely on, the company said in a statement. Amazon Pharmacy is filling that gap by bringing prescriptions directly to consumers' doors, often within hours. The online pharmacy service carries a range of medications for common conditions like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and depression. Certain prescriptions, such as those for medical devices, Schedule II drugs, and vaccines, cannot be filled through Amazon. While Amazon Pharmacy said it would expand its same-day delivery service to Massachusetts by the end of this year, the company did not provide a specific date. The spokesperson said the company was unable to share further details at this time. The pharmacy currently delivers to physical addresses in all 50 U.S. states with varying delivery speeds. Most Massachusetts orders are delivered the next day or within 2 or 3 days, according to the spokesperson. Customers can check their online pharmacy dashboard for personalized delivery times and cost estimates. Amazon Pharmacy said it achieved faster delivery speeds in 2025 using innovative transportation methods, which included e-bikes, electric cars, ferries, and horses in different parts of the country. Three things to know about coyotes this year because it's mating season. They're very common in Massachusetts. However, you may be seeing more of them than usual. That's because the period of late January through early March is their mating season. Community engagement biologist Megan Crawford of Mass Wildlife said they simply seeing a lot of coyote is not a dangerous experience, even if you're in Boston. Coyotes live and mate and have pups in every city and town in Massachusetts, so those sightings are, again, not something to be concerned about, she said. However, there are three things you should know and do in regards to coyote mating season in Massachusetts. One, directly supervise your pets. That means if you are outside with them, be no more than 6 feet away from your pets. Coyotes are territorial animals. It's mating season, and they're more likely to be aggressive if they perceive a threat to their access of mates in the area. It's important that you are physically near your pet or pets so that the human presence can influence the coyote's behavior. Step 2, secure outside food sources from your property. They're omnivores, which means that they can eat both plants and animals to gain substance. We really, as people, are really good accidentally providing easy meals in our backyard that coyotes are attracted to. We can take steps to measure that we're not attracting them to the residential areas to find food. The Mass Wildlife biologist said that residents should take down their bird feeders, put away their unsecured trash cans, take out their outdoor compost, safeguard their unguarded backyard chickens, and other opportunities to fight for coyotes to feast on human-related food services. And step 3, hazing coyotes, why and how you should do it. The biologist said that we should haze coyotes, as in screaming or being loud at them with the intention of driving them away when you first appearance see them. That's how coyotes defend their own territories. They chased other coyotes out of the territories. Suggested hazing methods include walking toward the animal, waving your arms above your head, shouting toward the animal, throwing things in their direction for the animal to scare it off until it leaves the area. These practices contribute to an effective coexistence between Massachusetts residents and the Massachusetts coyotes. The search is suspended for the husband of the woman who died falling through the ice. First responders suspended a search Sunday morning for the man who was believed to have fallen through the ice with his wife at First Encounter Beach in Eastham. Additional search efforts will be conducted when changes to the ice conditions occur, allowing access for public safety personnel, said the Eastham Police Department. The body of the woman was recovered on Saturday morning. The Eastham Police Department said the search resumed around 7 a.m. on Sunday, with members of both the police and fire departments returning to Bees River at the beach to conduct a follow-up search. As Eastern Police drone was deployed for about 2 hours to give an aerial search view of the entire area. First responders also searched by foot on the accessible shoreline. The search concluded around 9 a.m., still without the man being located. Authorities are not identifying the couple at the request of the family. Eastern Police first received a call at 9:07 on Saturday about a dog that was wet and appeared to be in distress near the beach. A police officer arrived to hear a woman screaming for help in the frigid waters near Bees River, a tidal creek near Boat Meadow. The officer went onto the ice to help and plunged through the ice and into the water himself. A second police officer who tried to help the first also plunged through the ice. Both made it to shore and were taken to Cape Cod Hospital to be evaluated, according to officials. The fire department arrived and members began rescue efforts. Divers from the county rescue squad recovered the woman's body under the ice shortly after 11 a.m. She was pronounced dead at the scene. During the search for the woman, first responders learned that she had been walking with her husband, so divers began looking for him. Rescuers believe he went through the ice before the first person police officer arrived. On Saturday, the extensive search, which included multiple divers and underwater remotely operated vehicle, was suspended for the night at around 5 p.m. An update on weather. For most of the country, the bitter cold will likely be ending soon. Folks in the central and eastern United States who've endured weeks of bitter cold and snow are wondering, is winter over? Will the polar vortex come back? Are we safe from the worst of winter's wrath? Experts have some good news. The most intense cold of the winter is largely behind the eastern and central states, according to AccuWeather lead meteorologist Paul Pestilek. Forecasters say there's no sign of any intrusions of Arctic air across the central or eastern United States for the next couple of weeks. In fact, no additional outbreaks of severe to extreme cold are expected for the rest of the winter. This again according to AccuWeather and long-range experts. Weather trader meteorologist Ryan Mao has some good news. Heading into the final week of February, the main polar vortex cold pool reservoir remains largely locked up over Canada, north of the Arctic Circle. It really looks like we're turning the corner on winter into the home stretch, he added. However, some experts urge caution in throwing dirt in the winter. Polar vortex expert Judah Cohen of MIT said in his blog on February 9th, the upcoming predicted pattern flip of cold western U.S. and mild U.S. Eastern mild U.S. is not permanent, in my opinion. I expect in late February or early March the pattern to resort to the dominant pattern of this winter, mild western U.S. and cold eastern U.S., even if briefly. He said this would be consistent with the stretched polar vortex, though it remains weak overall. A weak or stretched polar vortex is bad news for winter weather haters in the United States. Folks are rooting for spring, want a strong polar vortex that's bottled up over the Arctic. Additionally, though, Cohen said that even if the cold returns in March, it is important to keep in mind cold in March is very different from cold in January, and snows become increasingly elevation dependent. Pestilek, in an email to USA Today, also cautioned that the vortex may stretch again next month, perhaps pushing some colder air from western Canada to the eastern United States in week 2 or 3 of March. But he added, this is very late for a disruption, and the impacts again may be minimal. Despite the warm-up, it doesn't mean winter is entirely over, he said. New risks will arrive due to the warm-up as colder, stormier conditions shift to the west. In addition, the persistent cold has caused a significant buildup of ice on streams, rivers, and bays across the Northeast and Midwest. With any thaw, after an extended period of frigid conditions and buildup of ice, the potential for ice jams and ice jam flooding will increase on non-tidal portions of streams and rivers. Rising temperatures will melt snow and ice over the next few weeks, which can trigger ice jams and river flooding earlier than usual, especially along the Mississippi and Ohio rivers. A planetary system puzzles scientists. Astronomers have observed a planetary system that challenges current planet formation theories, with a rocky planet that formed beyond the orbits of its gaseous neighbors, possibly after much of the planet-forming material had been used up. The system, observed using the European Space Agency's CHEOPS space telescope, consists of 4 planets, 2 rocky and 2 gaseous. orbiting a relatively small and dim star called a red dwarf about 107 light years from Earth in the direction of the Lynx constellation. A light year is the distance light travels in a year, 5.9 trillion miles. The star, named LHS-1903, is about 50% as massive and 5% as luminous as our Sun. The order of the planets is what caught the attention of the scientists. The innermost planet is rocky, the next two are gaseous, and the fourth one, which current planetary formation theory suggests should be gaseous, is instead rocky. The planet formation paradigm states that planets close to their host star should form small and rocky with little to no gas or ice, said astronomer Thomas Wilson of the University of Warwick in England, lead author of the study published in the journal Science. This is because this environment is too hot to maintain substantial gas or ice, and any atmosphere that do form are likely removed via irradiation from their host star. Conversely, planets at larger separations are thought to be built in colder regions with a lot of gas and ice that would create gas-rich worlds with large atmosphere. This system challenges that by giving us a rocky planet outside the gas-rich planets. Wilson called a system built inside out. In our solar system, the four inner planets are rocky, and the four outer planets are gaseous. The rocky dwarf planets, like Pluto, that orbit beyond the gas planets, are much smaller than any of the solar system's planets. Astronomers have detected about 6,100 planets beyond our solar system, called exoplanets, since the 1990s. All four in the newly observed system orbit closer to the star than our solar system's innermost planet, called Mercury. In fact, the outermost planet orbits at about 40% of the orbital distance between Mercury and the Sun. This is typical for planets orbiting red dwarf stars that are so much less powerful than our Sun. The two rocky planets are categorized as super-Earths, meaning rocky like the Earth, but 2 to 10 times more massive. The two gas planets are categorized as mini-Neptunes, meaning gaseous and smaller than our solar system's smallest planet, Neptune, but larger than the Earth. The researchers suspect that rather than forming all at once in a large disk of gas and dust swirling around their host star, this system's planets form sequentially, with gas and others would be made up of atmosphere of the fourth planet being used up by its sibling planets before it coalesced. Wilson said the fourth planet most likely was a late bloomer. This fourth planet also is interesting because of its potential habitability. Its mass is 5.8 times that of Earth, and it's about 140 degrees Fahrenheit. A temperature of 60 degrees Celsius is very similar to the hottest temperature recording on Earth, 57 degrees Celsius, so it's definitely possible that this planet is habitable, said Wilson. Well, on today's reading with a little bit of history trivia, on this day in 1801, the U.S. House of Representatives broke an electoral tie between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr. Electing Jefferson president, Burr became vice president. In 1863, five appointees to the Public Welfare Society of Geneva announced the formation of an International Committee for the Relief of Wounded Combatants, which would later be renamed the International Committee of the Red Cross. In 1864, during the Civil War, the Union ship USS Housatonic was rammed and sunk in the Charleston Harbor, South Carolina, by the Confederate hand-crank submarine H.L. Hunley in the first naval attack of its kind. The Hunley also sank. And in 1897, the forerunner of the National PTA, the National Congress of Mothers, convened its first meeting in Washington with over 2,000 attendees. And in 1992, serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer was sentenced to life imprisonment after being found guilty of 15 counts of first-degree murder. And in 2008, Kosovo declared its independence from Serbia. Well, and that's a wrap for the Patriot Ledger for Tuesday, February 17th. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great day.